Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we have a roundup of the latest news, including Apple TV Plus is finally revealed. The Matrix turns 20 years old, and for our topic this week, we are going to have a little fun crossing over TV shows to create something completely new. And then stick around, because after a normal show ends, our trip to the tethered world begins as we take a spoiler-filled look at Jordan Peele's Us. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing today?
I am whooped. And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Did you just refer to me as John Davenports?
No. Why? Yes, maybe I did.
I heard plural, and I've actually officially lost enough weight that I can't be counted as a plural.
I think he was just talking about your many personalities.
I really believe I didn't say that, and you just wanted to mention that you lost weight.
Well, still, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm just going to pat myself on the back over here.
You don't get to humble brag. What kind of show you think this is, man? By the way, I was just at C2E2 hosting panels for Cobra Kai. So
I knew you were going to drop that.
Hey, can I pick this up for you right now, or is it just too much?
No. Ralph Macchio, right on the ground. Dropped it.
Oh, you dropped this name right here.
I know. William Zabka, dropped it.
Wow.
Harry Lennox from The Blacklist, who is also in Man of Steel. And in Batman vs. Superman, and we do agree that Ben Affleck was a fantastic Batman. Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is that, like, on one of these telecast things of yours on YouTube, they actually dropped your name from it.
Yeah, I'm not mentioned in the YouTube video. But really, nobody came there to see me except people I know, so I get that. I totally respect it. But yeah, it's pretty cool. So Patreon subscribers, I think the video's there, but it's on YouTube. You can find it if you want to find it. The Cobra Kai panel from C2E2 and the Blacklist panel from C2E2. Those were fun.
Words were exchanged.
Yep. Shout out to Troy Heinrichs from the Blacklist Exposed. So, all right, now let's get into the show, because I know there's like a rule, 2 minutes of banter and you got to get into it or people quit. We don't want people to quit. You just started.
Well, I mean, we're bantering. I think we've exceeded 2 minutes.
Can you show me where on the paper that there's this rule?
There's a rule book. You haven't read it?
There's a podcast rule book, man.
It's
out
there.
This has been proven week in, week out. All right. News roundup. Over the past week, MoviePass has relaunched with a $15 unlimited package. Expendables 4 was confirmed, and Stallone and Dolph are definitely in, but no word on the others. Bill and Ted 3 was officially confirmed by Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, and William Sadler will return as Death. And they'll sink his battleship again. Amazon casts Sam Strike, what an awesome name, as gunslinger Roland Deschain in the Dark Tower series pilot. ABC renewed The Connage for season 2. The Criterion Channel is no longer dead and will launch in April. The students at North Bergen High School threw together a play based on Alien, and that's worth mentioning just because it sounds pretty freaking amazing. Disney has officially assumed Fox, which means, yes, you'll get your expanded MCU with all the mutants and stuff. And Supernatural has confirmed season 15 will be the end. Anything and all of that gets you guys excited.
Well, good for the Supernatural people for being able to decide that at 15, that's when they're going to drop the show while they're on top.
Are they still on top?
As far as like the story-wise is concerned, there was a lull in like seasons 8 or 9, and they brought it way back up. So it's an amazing show again from there. So yeah, they're on top right now. Wait for them to decide when it's time for them to check out. Besides, I want to see Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki and even Misha do something different.
I mean, they obviously didn't want to themselves, because they've been latched onto this baby for... It's just a show. I can't believe it. 22 episodes, 15 years. It's so many episodes. It's just a lot.
Is a lot, but there's some shows that have even exceeded that.
Yeah, that doesn't make it a good idea. I can't think of any show that should be longer than 8 seasons. Not a single one. Not one.
Well, as far as they're concerned, I think that's a testament to how much fun they were having making that show. Because for them to show up every single year and be like, let's do it again. And for them to even find ways to improve upon the show each season, even after it was only supposed to be a 5-season show. And they went long, long beyond that.
I'd like to be in that pitch meeting, like when it started. Hey, guys, I got this idea, this supernatural thing. It's going to be really fun. It's going to basically be Scooby-Doo, but with two dudes in a cool car. And it's only going to go 5 years, and we're going to wrap this baby up. Then 5 years comes. You want to hang around for another 10? Yeah, I can figure that out. So let's do it.
Yeah.
That's basically the pitch meeting.
I don't think that they ever said we're going to put a cut on after the 5 years. I don't think they were ever like, oh, we're going to do 10 more years. I think they were like, we're going to go for as long as these people stay alive.
I think Jensen and Jared were like, we got to pay for that beach house. So let's just, that's what's going on. Any of that appeal to you, Amanda?
Well, did you guys watch the, they made an actual trailer for the Alien play from that high school?
Yeah, the Alien they did was
it
really
was
good.
So cool. And they made a trailer. Most plays don't have a trailer. This one had a whole trailer. It was so cool.
Most high school plays don't even have a play. They just have a bunch of people running around, forgetting their lines, and then going, ah, oh, I was supposed to be at McDonald's at 8.
They definitely don't have an Alien play, so that's pretty cool. Like, honestly, I was blown away by the creativeness of the individual who obviously had to run this, and then all of the students who participated, and that it became such a thing. I would have never expected that would be the platform that they choose, the franchise that they choose to try to launch a play from. It's just crazy.
I just think it's great. Those kids are awesome. My kind of kids.
Yeah.
I like them.
That reminds me of when I was growing up, one of the high schools put on a play of The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
Even for it being the 80s, early 80s or mid 80s, it mesmerized me. That's one of the reasons why I like The Hobbit so much, as far as like the story of it and the cartoon and the books. Not so much the movie, but it kind of reminds me of the same thing this school did. And yeah, it's very cool.
The first Hobbit and the second Hobbit were pretty good. It's just you don't need three Hobbits.
Or maybe you do.
No, I'm telling you. I think we can all agree. I'm assuming you will jump on board. Two and a half would have been fine. Two movies, we're good. We didn't need that third one.
I haven't watched the Hobbit movies.
So then why do you have an opinion on this?
I don't. I just said, you don't really know. Maybe we do need three Hobbits.
Okay.
Nope, you don't really don't.
I've heard a lot of people who have an opposite opinion from you two.
Opinions are important when you have one, Amanda, not when you make them up.
I'm not making my, I don't have an opinion, but I'm saying you guys, I've heard a lot of people liked the Hobbit movies, so you guys might be alone.
Who are your lot of people? The internet?
No, I have some friends that are big Lord of the Rings
all
nerds.
All over the internet.
And they like them. They don't yeah. hate them.
It's all over. All right, well, the thing that stuck out to me the most is that MoviePass is still a thing. They
Why?
Relaunched, and they said that they're already profitable. What?
How?
I don't know. They're making stuff up. I don't understand. But why are you guys like Dracula? Why are you not dead? You just came back. You bit everybody that bought into your service, and you're still hanging around. You've been staked over and over and over. I used to champion you people, and then you did what you did. I just can't get back on board with that train.
I'm not on board of this train either. This train has gone past me. I'm walking the other direction because I'm not taking part in this. I'm so irritated with the fact that they're trying to campaign it as it's like their old program, but it's not, because they still have limitations on like the movies that you can see. It's like, that's not unlimited then. Like, if you see too many movies, then you're going to be limited on what ones you can see. What?
The whole, to me, MoviePass became like a Michael Bay movie. And at some point, it exploded in a giant fireball. And everybody just walked away slowly.
Was it a fireball that he made in one movie, and he just keeps on bringing that same exact fireball into a different movie, and different movie, and different movie?
Yes, and everybody walks away slow motion with shirts, right, you know, wavering in the wind.
A little bit of a tear.
Mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
is to obviously,
and everyone has a
six
pack.
Broken.
Everyone has a six pack.
That's a world I need to live in.
It's a good world. My imagination is a good place. Nobody's overweight up here. Nobody. All right. Well, over the past week or so, we've had a couple trailers drop. Here's what they are. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Toy Story 4, Dora the Explorer, which has a like a teenage Dora, which is interesting. Deadwood, the movie, it is happening. It did happen. It'll be coming out in May after Game of Thrones ends. And Stranger Things Season 3. Of those, anything really catch your eye?
totally Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think we can all agree that that trailer was awesome.
No, I heard people on the internet, Amanda, that didn't like
you're
it.
You're so dramatic.
I heard so many people on the internet who didn't like it. Also, they made a big deal about the poster.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm one of those people who made a big deal about the poster. It looks ridiculous. Like
Photoshop Brad Pitt his head on a body or something. Is so that what ridiculous. They did?
That's what they're
meant. It looked fine to me.
Yeah, it looked bad. I'm like, this doesn't look like Brad Pitt.
I'm fully on board with bad Photoshop.
It totally looked like Brad Pitt's face was stapled to Deadpool.
It was just not a good time. But that trailer had me laughing. There was a certain line in there that, man, I was just rolling because it was like, if anybody kills somebody, it's you go to jail. It's manslaughter. And of course, the trailer is much funnier than my impersonation. But
yeah, the line is actually because
now that joke's not going to be funny in the movie.
Well,
no, I'm going to hear your voice. And
I'm like, you're welcome.
That's not how that was told. No, I remember it. But what that was a great line until you did that.
Until I ruined it. You're welcome.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
That was a great trailer, though. I mean, it's Tarantino. Like, literally, all I had to say was their name, and I would have showed up.
Honestly, did you see how large the text was? It was like Quentin Tarantino's ninth film or whatever.
Why does he always do that in his movies? The eighth film, the ninth film, the seventh film. Dude, we get it. It's
your movie.
Just say it's a Tarantino movie. I don't need to know what number you are. Do you want to know what episode we're on? 345 or 6 or something? You want to know that every episode? Nobody wants to know that.
He's like the count. One bitches, two bitches,
Except his are N-words, and you can't really do that in the commercial, so that would be bad.
Yeah.
Right. The thing I'm most excited about is actually Stranger Things Season 3 trailer. I was just so stoked. I'm ready for it.
Doesn't Mike look like he's 64 years old now? I mean, he's like Bran on Game of Thrones. He's fully grown.
He's going to end up being like 7 feet tall. I'm 15, yo.
We're not kids anymore. That's what
I heard. Why are you so aggro right now?
You're going to be really excited. I have a Stranger Things surprise for you later on in this episode.
Mm.
If you care, which it doesn't sound like you do. Mm.
I mean, I was just waiting to see how much more you were going to say, because sometimes you just shut up long enough and Amanda will tell you everything.
Because I just don't stop talking. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
That's fair. I'm most excited about Deadwood. Just because of...
Really?
Yeah. Deadwood is a series that needed an ending. I love that series.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I never watched it. I didn't know you watched it.
It has, Timothy in it. It has my
Timothy?
Timothy off with his pants.
Oh.
Off with his pants. Yes.
Oh,
Timothy Olyphant. Okay. Justified. My man.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it has Swear again. I mean, it just has... The cast is phenomenal. The story was really good. And it never had an ending. It was one of those shows that never got an ending. For whatever reason, never came back. Hmm. So now we finally have an ending. I can't wait.
So I have a question about this show. For people who are like me and aren't big on Westerns, is this a show you can get into if you're not normally a Western fan? Or is it very old Western?
That's tough. It's very Western.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like
Westworld Western.
No, it's okay. Western all the way. I mean, the whole thing is Western.
That sounds very slow and boring.
With just very foul dialogue, really.
Okay.
So, yeah. Okay, we're here. The big thing, the big elephant in the room, the new product, because apparently they don't create new stuff anymore. They just, make their own version of existing products anymore. Apple's new streaming service, Apple TV Plus, will launch in fall and will be ad-free on demand and with both streaming and download options. Sounds a lot like Netflix. With TV shows from Spielberg, Oprah, J.J. Abrams, Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, Kumail Nanjiani, and even Big Bird have shows here. And one that really caught my eye with... Yeah, he's got one too. One that caught my eye with Jason Momoa and Alfred Woodward called C, where a virus has left the planet blind. There's a handful of movies and 30 TV shows are already on the docket. There will also be an Apple News Plus service, and the TV app will be updated soon with the ability to house several apps in one location. So if you want to watch a movie, it will search all of your apps for it, as opposed to having to pull up whatever separate app it is. That's all part of this. But the actual TV Plus doesn't come until the fall. John, what do you think about Apple TV Plus?
I'm frustrated by it. It may be a very nice and great idea. I don't see myself buying into it just because I have a bad history with like something with Apple. But the idea of them making it open so that you can have it on Roku and have it on Fire Stick and have it on certain TVs is a good move for them, because at least you're not limited. You're limiting your audience to only people who have Apple devices. So that's smart of them to do this time around. At the same time, I'm getting to a period where I want to lessen the amount of things that I'm watching, or not really watching, but the amount of places I'm going to watch things from. I don't need to add another one to it.
It's cable all over again. The thing we were trying to get away from, we now are back at.
Yeah, thanks, Apple. Hold on a second. So you can spend, what, they spend $15 billion or something on this? Some absurd number.
$1 billion?
$1 billion. That's still a lot of money. I thought there was a close. 5. Maybe it's 1.5. I don't know. Anyway,
how's
the point
your
is...
savings account working out?
You can spend $1 billion on this, but you still can't make a phone that you can customize the background just like you can with an Android or a Google phone.
I'm
like,
sure
come
you can.
On.
You...
No, not the same way you can customize a Google Pixel or something.
Well, that's because you can... Droid does, Apple says you can't. So anyway, Droid does, Apple doesn't allow.
I'm with Johnny. This is so frustrating because I am tired. I'm getting to the point, I didn't used to watch Hulu. Now I watch a lot of stuff on Hulu. My mm-hmm. goodness. And now I'm starting to forget where I'm supposed to go to watch the shows that I like, because there's all these different platforms that I have to go to stream them. And it's beginning to get frustrating. And I only watch like 3 different streaming services. And then Disney's trying to come out, and then it's going to compete with Apple. And I'm like, please just stop.
And everybody's coming out with their own. And every yeah. network has their own, or has their own coming out. I know, I mean, it's really, you know, great problem to have. Like, we have all the content we could ever want. But aren't you guys kind of worried that we're going to come to the point where, and Netflix is already running into it, where if you... The shows that you find and then one of these streaming services, you love it, but because there's so many other options, it doesn't get renewed. Only the really popular shows mm-hmm. are ever going to come back, because there's too many of them. And that's kind of what I'm concerned about. I mean, I'm glad Apple's got unlimited funds. Of course they do. It's Apple. I mean, I think the most profitable company in the world. That concerns me, though. I don't want to get to a point where I can't ever get attached to a TV show, or I can't ever have that fan reaction that we all love to have, you know, like with shows like Stranger Things, where we're so excited for the next season because we're not going to get another season, because, you know, it comes, it goes. They probably have a cliffhanger to try to get you to come back, and then it never gets renewed. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with Fox every time I watch a new show.
Oh, yeah.
The Fox dilemma, the old Fox dilemma. Is that a legitimate concern, or is that just in my head?
No, it's a legitimate concern. On the other side of why I'm frustrated by it is that when Microsoft was actually working on putting something like this together a couple years ago, and it, before they even were able to announce exactly how it works, it was getting bad press up and down the street. But now we have Apple releasing this, and we have people like, yeah, here's my money, take it all right now. And it's just crazy to see how depending on which cool kid gets to say what it is, this is what's going to end up working out. You know, it. Also, I'm just getting tired of being nickel and dime to death by all these different companies.
Well, to be fair, 5 years ago, I don't know if we were in the same boat. I mean, today is a completely different... I mean, the landscape has changed astronomically. Astronomically, where we were 5 years ago is not where we are now. 5 years ago, network television was still pretty viable, and cable was still pretty viable. Now, they're fighting for survival at this point, and streaming is kicking everybody's ass.
Well, and I wonder, too, with Microsoft, if they were able to get their hands on the types of projects and profitable names that Apple is. Like, the list Aaron read off, those are tickets. Spielberg and even Oprah, I'm sure, will get some people in. And then you're talking about Jason Momoa, who is now leading, like, the DC. He's like, the dude that everyone is obsessed with as a superhero. So you're inviting all of these people that are prime real estate right now. And that's what Apple is taking advantage of and saying, hey, we've already got all these things that are going to be happening here. Whereas Microsoft maybe was too open with their initial plan and didn't have enough grasp at that time to be able to get their hands on those types of projects. I don't know. But I'm
5 years ago when they were talking about it, there was no, it wasn't as prestige as it is now.
Yeah.
Now everybody wants it on. There's all that streaming money out there.
Yeah, because people don't want to pay for cable. But as Aaron alluded to at the beginning of this conversation, we're by doing this, by
spending
us
spending more.
Yeah, we're going to be back in the same boat because now those companies are going to have to, they're going to increase their rates at some point, even if it's just a few dollars. But then a few dollar increase on each of those streaming platforms are going to add up to about the equivalent of what your cable bill was.
If not more. Not to mention you have data caps and a lot of states now, and you're going to exceed data caps.
Yeah, so. And where are we
in
at
rural
with,
countries? Go in rural counties. Those poor people, they don't have necessarily the fastest broadband, so they're probably still waiting for Stranger Things season one to finish. Yeah, like buffering.
Especially with like the state of net neutrality right now. It's not a good time.
Interesting. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm excited because it's amazing to have all the content. Basically, any show you want is out there. But to me, I'm just concerned about I find the show that I want and it only gets 8 episodes because that's it. And it doesn't have a finite ending. I'm actually fine. I love 8 episode seasons and it's done. That's fantastic to me. But if it's not concluded or it's left on a cliffhanger, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about getting a bunch of those.
I think a lot more shows are getting to the point now, though, where they're wrapping up the seasons pretty well. They're leaving them open-ended enough where they can continue, but where it's wrapped up enough to conclude that one season. I think that the streaming service providers are getting very smart with that when they're making those originals that they're not sure
if
they're going to finish.
Netflix with the OA, the ending of the OA, sure, there's a way to write that off as a... fine, if they're going to end the show, this is an interesting place to end it. Or also the Umbrella Academy. You can sort of say, okay, well, if this is how they're going to end the show, this is an interesting way to end it. But they also ended both those shows with, hey, this is a huge, like, there's more coming. And there has to be, like, I can't wait to see what's going on here. So, like, I don't know if you're right that these streaming services know exactly what they're doing. Like, even all of the Marvel shows, there was more room to go. And they still said, all right, bye.
I get that one, though, man. That was so much money, and they're like, look, we're not going to advertise for... We've talked about this in the show before. We don't want to advertise for your coming network. I get that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Oh, well, and I don't think that they've perfected it yet, but I think that they're starting to realize that there is value in doing that because they're creating so much content, and they realize they're going to have to start doing that if they want to not piss viewers off.
My head's exploding. I mean, there's so many things to watch anymore.
I can't keep up, and I'm sad about it.
And I want to know if, like, Spielberg makes a movie for Apple.
Oh, God.
Is it going to be eligible for Oscar consideration? What's going to happen with that?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh. Something to think about. Let's move on to significant anniversary. But first, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. The Matrix turns 20 years old. Thomas Anderson is a computer hacker who learns from mysterious rebels led by Morpheus about the true nature of his reality and his role in the war against its controllers, led by the insidious Agent Smith. The Matrix opened on March 31st, 1999, and made $463 million worldwide. It spawned two sequels, and The Matrix Reloaded in 2003, which made $742 million worldwide, and The Matrix Revolutions, which arrived 6 months later in 2003 and made $427 million. So, The Matrix turns 20. Why do you feel like this movie is still regarded as one of the best action films in history?
For the time, this movie taught us a lot of things that we are capable of doing now. Like, there was a lot of new things they were pushing. There was a lot of boundaries they were breaking. And it was just changing the way that the game was played. And really, that's right there. It taught us with that movie that you can have both style and substance and tell a solid story. And I actually attribute The Matrix to a lot of what we have today in the way of Marvel or DC movies. It taught us how to push those boundaries with limitations.
Well, and if you think about, too, the kind of content they were introducing, and in a way, it was very philosophical and forward thinking, too, because not only are they talking about AI, which at that time in 1999 was a huge thing people were concerned with. We're creating all of this technology, and is it going to, I mean, we're kind of in the same boat now, but more advanced.
Now we're just letting it happen.
Yeah, but yeah, there was a big concern of, like, if we're going to be giving too much way to technology, or if we should stay in our ways. And so I think that also had a lot to do with the concept of what this film was. But then, too, there was so much about what you would do. There was so much reasoning of, would you want to stay in your, would you want to be part of this great sub reality, or would you want to live in your own reality and have control? So there was a lot of different things that allowed people to think about their own, I guess, it made them introspective mm-hmm. about themselves, but also was really freaking cool to watch. When you're able to do that, that's why I think the Wachowskis were so credited for doing something so great with The Matrix, is because they were able to combine so many different questions in our mind that innately happened, and also make us really excited for the next action sequence with, like, the kicks and the, of course, when he dodges it by going down, Neo, and he flips down. Also, his leather jacket, like, he was so cool. Seriously. So cool.
There's something about the relevance today. I actually rewatched this not too long ago, and it was amazing to me how relevant it still is, because we've actually gotten closer and closer to the Matrix as we've gotten old. Like, it's one of those things where when you first saw it, it seems like a pretty far out there idea. I mean, yeah, we had some technology and stuff, but we're like, okay, being reliant on machines, come on. Come on. We would rather be in the machine than out there living life. Come on. Come on. Yeah, now I think that's completely accurate. I mean, it's not as seedy as the movie was, but we've gotten to that point where people don't want to unplug. They don't want to take their minds away from their machines. I mean, we're kind of there. So this is honestly a documentary, I think, in 2019. 20 years later, this has become a documentary of sorts. But at the time, the reason why, to me, it still sticks is because relevance, the action is great, but action alone is not going to keep your movie relevant. It's not going to keep your movie in people's minds. Just like Die Hard, movies like Predator, it's not just the action. It's because you told a story that resonated with people, and they were able to cling to both the set pieces as well as how they put the story all together. Because when you talk to people about The Matrix, nobody really talks about the other two movies.
Well, because they definitely weren't as good.
They weren't. So the ideas just didn't hold as well in those movies. I mean, you know, they have varying effects for people, but everybody seems to agree The Matrix 1 is one of the best movies of all time. And it's because that whole combination and the continuing relevance. You guys remember when you first saw it?
Yes.
No, but I remember watching it a lot. So I think that's probably why I can't remember my first experience with it, is because I watched it a lot. And I don't know why. It's not like when I look now, if I were to think back and say, oh, what were the movies that I thought were the best growing up? The Matrix probably wouldn't be on there, but I watched it so often that it probably should be on that list. And I don't know what it was about it.
Do you think you, like, diluted it because you watched it so much?
Possibly. I also, and let's be honest, I was pretty young when that movie came out. So it was, as I was able to watch it continually growing up more, I was able to understand more concepts that were built into it that I didn't realize when I first saw it. It's because I was so young. Movie. Yeah. And you're able to grasp, like, the general concept of what's going on even from a young age. Like, I think somebody as old as, like, 6 or 7 could understand what the movie is happening.
What?
I think they could. I really think that they could understand the basic concept of what the movie is about. But understanding all of the sub stories and the sub, all the information that they have in there, and I guess the, not plot points, not theories, but I don't know, just there's so much in there that they're trying to get across to you, themes that are in there. And when you watch it as you're an adult and your mind has, you've had more experiences and you're able to grasp onto those concepts, the movie just somehow becomes more. And I think that's why it worked so well for me, is because I watched it at so many different ages in my life, young and as I got older.
I just remember that when this movie came out, it was a chilly March night, and I had, it was myself and my whole crew of friends that I worked with at Computer City, and it was like a late night after work, and we all went and saw this movie, and it was just a really good time. And like when we left this theater, we couldn't stop talking about what we saw. It was just, we were floored by it. And this was around the same time that we had just finished seeing the re-release of Star Wars in the theater. And though that we were excited about that, this really hit us. So it's really a fond memory.
I just remember being blown away. Soundtrack is great. Mm. Everything about it. It's one of those movies where I walked in, everybody was raving about it. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm not a huge sci-fi fan. Never have been. I'm not a big sci-fi. Cyber technology thrillers, hacking movies, all that stuff. Because, you know, John and I both have worked in IT to a degree, John more so than me. When you watch those kinds of things and you have some experience in it, it's always frustrating because you're like, no, you can't do that. No, you can't type that fast. No, none of this stuff is accurate.
Why is she text messaging in Excel?
Oh my gosh, like that video. There's a music video.
Oh God.
It's so bad.
But this is one of those where it didn't matter what happened, I could really get behind it because it was such an innovative, new, fresh idea. And it was made fun. It took an intelligent script, made it fun. And I hadn't seen an action movie do that in a long time. And that was just, and then of course the bullet time, which we're going to talk about in a second. There's a lot of innovation with this thing. So here's some fun trivia before we talk about bullet time. Legendary Hong Kong stunt coordinator Wu Pingyang, he initially refused to work on the film. He said he'd only agree if he had complete control of the fights and that he trained the actors before they shoot. So the Wachowskis actually complied with this request. The opening action scene took 6 months of training and 4 days to shoot. So 6 months of training, four days to shoot. Insane. Lawrence Fishburne stated that once he read the script, he did not understand why other people found it confusing. However, he had a doubt if the movie would ever be made because it was so smart. I think that's pretty accurate. The studio insisted on a great deal of explanatory dialogue as they described the screenplay as, quote unquote, the script that nobody understands. Can I ask? I don't understand why people don't understand it.
It's because the script is so compact. There's so much in there. And there's not really a lot of people who were able to grasp the concepts that were in here at that time. I mean, if you think about where we're at now, we're able to understand, we can forward think that future and we can see where there's a world where this is an actual possibility. But there was so much in this movie that seemed so unrealistic. And when you're not, I think for some people, when you're not able to visualize or understand what it is someone's talking about, sometimes it's hard for you to actually comprehend what they mean. That was probably one of the issues, is there's just so much going on in it and so much that was innovative, as was mentioned before, that people weren't really able to grasp it. They really did have a lot of levels in this movie.
Yeah, but I got it. I didn't think it was over complicated.
Well, the Wachowskis are very much, they're very good, and they always understood how to not only tell you the story, but they know how to show you the story. And that's one of the reasons why I think they had such a hard time with other people understanding it, because there's a lot of things they're showing you and they expect you to just understand because it's visual storytelling. And why not use that ability to do that? So that's where I think that's like, you get these studio execs who are looking at things and all they're reading are words on a piece of paper. And to them, they're reading words on a piece of paper and they don't get it.
That makes sense.
Maybe they poorly wrote the script.
No, this is one where I actually find the Wachowskis to be visually amazing storytellers. It's usually with the script that they do struggle, but this isn't one of the scripts that I would say.
Well,
struggle.
Yeah, but I mean, just the way they could have written it, because when you're writing the script, you have to use words that convey what your visual is. So maybe the way that they contextualize what they were picturing was hard for those execs to understand what they meant by that.
Well, they also have a habit of throwing so much exposition in that it makes your head spin. You know, it's just like, wait, what? What? You just over-explained me into not understanding your movie anymore. You know, that's
sure.
I don't trust anything you just told me because I thought I got it, but then you told me so much that maybe I missed it.
I think it would be really fun for us to all try to read that script. I'm sure it's available online and see.
I can't read.
Okay, so us minus Johnny.
We can interpretive listeners, dance it for Johnny.
Yeah, right? But I wonder if...
I clearly like that sort of thing.
interpretive dance.
Who doesn't?
With puppets.
No, just interpretive dance.
No, but did you hear that? Say he was ready. Interpretive dance with puppets.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are like making people tune out. They made it past the banter and then you do this. All scenes that take place within the Matrix have a green tint, as if watching them through a computer monitor, while scenes in the real world have a blue tint. The fight scene between Morpheus and Neo, which is neither in the real world nor in the Matrix, is tinted yellow.
I don't remember a yellow tint.
It doesn't matter if you remember scene. It's there.
I know, but that's why I'm trying to understand where you said it wasn't in the Matrix and it wasn't in reality, but I don't remember this.
If you don't remember a line. All right,
it's my turn. Everyone's tuning out. Or yelling at the radios right now.
That's fair. Okay, so bullet time. The term bullet time is a registered trademark of Warner Brothers. Formally established in March 2005 in connection with the video game The Matrix Online. The term had first been used within the original script of the 1999 film The Matrix, and later in reference to the slow motion effects in the 2001 video game Max Payne. In the years since the introduction of the term via The Matrix films, it has become a commonly applied expression in popular culture. Was bullet time a blessing or a curse? What do you think, Amanda?
Totally a blessing. How could it be a curse?
Have you watched movies that were made past The Matrix?
Every movie
that implored it?
who thought that they could execute it and just failed to do so? Yeah, I guess so. But I still think that it's a blessing because that is such a unique technique that obviously people weren't able to craft after them. And it really gives a lot of credit to them as directors to be able to find something that worked only in their movie so well that even 20 years later, we're like, wow, you did a really good job. Like, to me, that moment, those moments still work for me. But people have not been able to replicate it.
And that as well. I mean, Wanted, I think, did a really good job of
it was, time. But it wasn't The Matrix. It was like, and it's so specific to The Matrix because it's almost iconic to The Matrix that it's hard for me to look at that and be like, oh, this is a different movie from The Matrix. Whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, somebody's trying to be The Matrix.
So it's neither a blessing nor a curse. What it is a tool that everyone has access to now. And some people execute it very well and some people suck at it. So that's my stance.
Wow. How that very
a smarter stance.
Political of you.
You know, I'm just going to take the middle ground and say, where it's been, you know, it doesn't, but it mostly does, but it mostly doesn't.
Well, no,
bother.
If I could sit here and go through a list of movies that it doesn't work, I can't remember any of them. But you're right. Wanted actually did a really good job of playing with the bullet time and it worked very well. Even the Max Payne movie did a decent job at playing with it. Even though if Max Payne, the movie messed that up, that's on them because that's what the whole game is. But I can't, off the top of my head, remember of a movie that did it poorly. One of the scary movies where they tried to implore it in there. Like, there was a whole part in the scary movie 3 or 4 where this girl did the whole jump in the air thing where it's like, boo! And she's up in the air and she's doing, like, the crane kick and it spins her around and then she falls on her ass or something.
I'm just going to say it's a blessing. Anytime we get a new technique, it's a blessing. Even found footage is still a blessing, even though people use it, you know, the wrong way a lot. So it's one of those things where, hey, nobody was doing that before. Now it's pretty awesome if you can do it right. It's just people either overdid it or they weren't the first ones to do it. So it doesn't stand out as much.
That's true.
But it's still cool to watch. I agree with you. Matrix, it's just amazing to watch. And all those, when he's dodging bullets and everything else, it's just a fun scene. Special effects don't look as great now as they did then, but very few do. Maybe Jurassic Park hold up. But
one of my brothers ended up with a metal curtain rod to his head because of The Matrix, because of his dodging of the bullet where he leans backwards.
He got a curtain rod stuck in his head?
Knocked to his head. We were sword fighting with them when we were younger. And the first time I went and swung at him and he was able to bend backwards and avoid getting hit in the face with it. But then he was like, that was so cool. That was The Matrix. Let's do it again. And I said, okay, 1, 2, 3. And I swung it again and it hit him right in the head.
Oh, so it's just like the movies. You do it more than once and you screw the whole thing up.
It was really funny though.
And you cause a head injury. Were you guys a fan of the sequels at all?
Yeah, I was. I really enjoyed them. I didn't think there was a problem with those. I didn't think there's as big of a problem with those stories as a lot of people did, but I did think that it told a full and complete story, and I enjoyed it.
I liked them, but they still weren't the first. There's no specific moment in any of those movies that I'm like, oh, I remember that from the other Matrixes. It's like, I remember most of the first Matrix, even though I haven't seen it in a very long time, aside from that one scene, apparently.
I really dig Reloaded. Revolutions, I could light it on fire, and it would be, like, seriously, I think I bought a copy and lit it on fire, or threw it in a fire pit. I can't remember.
That's, I can't imagine you wasting money like that.
Oh, that's how much I don't like it. I mean, I'm really not a fan.
Wow.
It's one of those movies where I hate watched it. About halfway through, I'm just like, how many more speeches are we going to give? How many more exposition scenes are we going to give? Wachowskis, did you just decide to put words for your entire plot? Because that's really what the movie ended up being. Not a fan.
Did you guys ever play the games?
No.
Oh, I was busy living my life.
Oh, I played them, and they were fun. I remember playing them, and they were a lot of fun.
Was there a lot of bullet time?
I think so. You could make it happen.
Was there an exposition
time? I don't think so.
Because that's what Revolutions was to me. It was just, instead of bullet time, we replaced it with exposition time. Oh. Look, another speech. Look, another rousing crowd speech. Oh, that's going nowhere. All right, so regardless of the sequels, this is my last question on The Matrix. Is this one you think could ever be remade?
Totally, it could be done. It would be hard not to see Keanu Reeves in it, because I picture him as Neo. And Lawrence Fishburne was, like, perfect for his role, I thought, too. Like, I think the casting in general was overall pretty great. But I still think that this is something that could be redone, and hopefully within the right hands could be done, hopefully, better. Even though it was a really great movie. But I would like to see somebody use today's technology and effects to be able to improve on some of that, too, and just make it look even cooler.
It could totally be redone. And I think they actually built it into the mythology of the whole series to be able to remake it. I've seen them remember there's some sort of speech that Aaron alluded to just a little bit ago, where they were talking about how this isn't the first time they've gone through this sort of thing with The Matrix.
Well, I'm on the bandwagon that you couldn't remake this movie.
What?
I don't think you can.
You're crazy.
I don't think you can.
Why not?
It's a product of its time. There's too much innovation. There's too much newness. The idea is, it's already been done about 6,400 times since this movie. I mean, this is a template that's been used a lot. Machines taking over the world. Machines taking over our identity. It's become who we are. It's not a film I believe you can redo.
Hmm.
I just don't. There's too much about it that's iconic. It'd be like redoing Jurassic Park. And I mentioned they tried that. Yeah. How'd that work out? Doing Raiders of the Lost Ark. Doing movies like that. Movies that are iconic, and you have too much that is iconic about them. I believe you could do a spinoff. You could do something in the same kind of world, just not a complete reboot or a remake.
Can we have new one come out with Keanu Reeves, since he looks almost the exact same age?
You could, probably.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things before you went and, like, zoned out and stopped listening to me. That's one of the things I was going to allude to, was that if they were to remake it, it should be remade as more of a sequel or maybe even a prequel, in some way always acknowledging the original movie so that it ties it all together. So not necessarily like it is a sequel or a reboot, or actually not necessarily that it's a reboot, but more so that it's like another progression through one of these cases where you get a group of people breaking out of the Matrix.
I gotcha. All right, let's move on. Our show is independently funded, therefore all the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. If you want to support The Ho, there are several tiers available, up to $20. They start at $1, they go to $20. At $3, we have a bonus monthly podcast called Bad Movie Night. The next movie is going to be Law Abiding Citizen, where we discuss a movie that critics or others have deemed a bad movie, but we like it. Then at $5, you get Bad Movie Night Plus. There's an exclusive monthly bonus episode where we discuss things that we won't discuss on a normal show. Things get more personal. Sometimes we'll tell you behind the scenes. It's always different every month. It's different every month. As you go up, there are more perks. You can even pick a topic or possibly guest for an episode. Once you sign up, you get an immediate access to all content in your tier. And that's at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Welcome, Stanley Daniel, Daniel Ryden, and Chris Houston. Thank you guys for being Patreon members. We'll be in touch with your perks, so check your Patreon messages.
Welcome, guys. Thanks for supporting the Hollywood Outsider.
Hi.
You couldn't even do a puppet?
Did I make this awkward all of a sudden?
Yeah. Nice job, John. Nice job. All right. What's coming out? New releases. We've got four that are coming out around the end of March. What do you got, John?
All right. First up, we got Unplanned. As one of the youngest Planned Parenthood clinic directors in the nation, Abby Johnson was involved in upwards to 22,000 abortions and counseled countless women in their reproductive choices. Her passion surrounding a woman's right to choose led her to become a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood, fighting to enact legislation for the cause she deeply believed in until the day she saw something that changed everything. This is directed by Chuck Knuzelman, Kerry Solomon, written by Kerry Solomon and Chuck Knuzelman, and stars Ashley Bratcher and Brooks Ryan. Unplanned.
So a bunch of dudes?
Yeah.
Tell them a story.
A bunch of dudes who wrote this. Yeah. Are telling a story about this. This is cool.
That seems pretty apt to our current climate. So then we have Tim Burton's newest movie, Dumbo, which then comes out on the 29th as well. Struggling circus owner Max Medici, enlists a former star and his two children to care for Dumbo, a baby elephant born with oversized ears. Oh my gosh, it's so cute too. When the family discovers that the animal can fly, it soon becomes the main attraction, bringing in huge audiences and revitalizing the rundown circus. The elephant's magical ability also draws the attention of V.A. Vandeveer, an entrepreneur who wants to showcase Dumbo in his latest larger-than-life entertainment venture. Stars Eva Green, Colin Farrell, and Michael Keaton.
I totally would have just said Dumbo. It was Dumbo with real people.
And the cutest elephant you're ever going to see in your whole life.
I would argue that the cartoon one is cuter.
No way. Did you see the way those eyes sparkle?
Did you see the way that cartoon eye sparkled?
No, I didn't. That's the problem.
Yeah, they actually got that from the cartoon.
So it still looks cute.
You know what else? They got the big ears from the cartoon.
They did get the ears from the cartoon.
All right. Next up is The Highwayman on Netflix, March 29th. That is where Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson star as the not quite Texas Rangers, but former Texas Rangers, who go after Bonnie and Clyde. This is a movie I talked about on our South by Southwest episode last week, which I hope everybody checked out. There's a lot of movies, and I think we did a great job. I'm not tooting your horn, but gonna drop
Sounds
a name there.
Sounds a lot like you are.
Anyway, I saw that movie. The movie is good. It could be better, but on Netflix, you can't go wrong, right? So definitely check that out. And, you know, Kevin Costner is the famous Frank Hamer.
Also on Netflix, we have Trailer Park Boys, the animated classic.
Boars? So it's about pigs?
Did I say boars? Let me try that again.
No, yeah, just keep rolling with it. I want to see the Trailer Park Boars.
You might as well. So it's the Trailer Park Boys. Now, this time, Nova Scotia's favorite miscreants have always been super sketchy. Carrying on their 12th season finale, the boys come as cartoon characters now. So this is going to be awesome.
Is that sarcasm? Or I don't know if you were a fan of the original show.
I'm not. I tried watching it, and it's right up there with like South Park, it doesn't really do me any favors either. But South Park was one of those things where I'm like, these are just assholes. I don't need to watch them.
You didn't like South Park, you Grinch?
I got like halfway through the first season of when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I said, this is not for me.
Wow, that's kind of surprising to me.
I don't think it was out when you were in your late teens.
He's trying to age himself down a little bit.
Do you have a calculator?
I said late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, I still don't think. No, I don't.
I know exactly where I was when this show came out. I was working at Computer City. That's late teens, early 20s.
Okay.
That's very specific.
That's weird. All right. So what is your pick of the week? Of all these movies, what are you guys going to see?
Dumbo.
Dumbo.
Yeah, Dumbo.
Oh my god, it looks so cute.
See, we keep making fun of Disney for like, hey, you guys are just making live action in your same cartoon. The whole internet keeps saying that, making fun of them, saying, I can't believe you guys can't come up with anything original. But what do? As soon as one of these damn movies comes out, I can't wait to go see it.
Yeah, I'm not even, there's nothing that looks different in The Lion King, but guess who's going to see it the first day it comes out?
Where are we at with Aladdin? Lion King, everybody seems to be on board with, but Aladdin is the one where they're like, I can't have Purple Will Smith.
Honestly, that looks like it's only going to be a smaller portion, and that's what I've heard too, is once he turns into like the real genie, like real Will Smith, then he becomes more of what we're I think, expecting to see. And I'm all on board for it. I think there's nothing wrong with Will Smith. I don't know what everyone is hating on this man for.
I said it before. I can't believe I live long enough to watch Will Smith be a pariah.
Yeah, that's it's weird times.
Where are you at with it? Are you with Aladdin? Are you good with Aladdin, John, or are you not on board with that one?
I'm down with the Aladdin. I'm not against Will Smith being the genie. I'm okay. Let's do this.
All right. Let's have a little fun with our topic, because we've had so many festivals the last month.
So many movies the last month.
So many movies. We are movied out. That's why we're actually taking the week off next week, which I should mention real quick. We're going to have a Game of Thrones Season 7 recap, so that's going to come out next week. It's going to be re-edited, maybe a couple extra things are shortened a little bit, but it's going to be a repeat. We're going to have a rerun.
to get you prepared for the new season
of Game of Thrones, and so we can have a break. But this week, we wanted to do something a little bit more fun and kind of do a TV theme.
TV!
So we...
I love TV.
So we've had a couple of these film festivals. Like we said, we wanted to just relax and have a good time. So before we get loopy, can you think of any TV crossovers you actually really enjoyed? I was really struggling to think of any that I actually liked.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, I have like five.
Well, hang on. Let's see.
Johnny will go first.
Yeah.
All right. So the one that pops in my head the most that I love so much is the Scooby-Doo episode of Supernatural.
I knew you were going to pick that.
Of course you did. Is that like the only show you still watch regularly? I'm convinced it is.
No. But, you know, I mean, how am I not going to talk about it? and then, you know, Dean trying to get into Daphne's pants. I mean, come on.
Oh.
These are all things that make sense to me.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't even watch the show, and that was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool episode.
Yeah. Like, how am I not going to talk about that? Another one that comes to mind is, like, Mork and Mindy on Happy Days. That was very cool.
Well, that was the launching pad, though, wasn't it? I mean, Mork and Mindy, that was kind of like a backdoor pilot. Does that count as a crossover?
I think Mork and Mindy showed back up again at the time.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes more sense.
What do you got, Amanda?
Okay, so
I've got five.
First and most important is Angel and Buffy, obviously.
Those were some pretty powerful... They used those crossovers pretty well.
They did. They were very smart
true.
About it.
Okay, that's true. I'll give you those.
Second, which neither of you guys are going to know this, was when Grey's Anatomy had the crossover from Station 19. Mm-mm. I was not on board with Station 19, and I haven't watched Grey's Anatomy still. Okay? Still haven't...
You said, Kay, like John and I are still listening. We stopped after you said Grey's Anatomy.
Anyway.
No, I'm actually searching like the internet for some more crossovers that I forgot about.
So my third one is another one you guys aren't going to know about, is Vampire Diaries and the Originals, because I realized I'm so much more on board with the Originals and these kinds of more adult characters, and it really helped draw me into that world. And then my last one is still very important, because it's New Girl, which I love New Girl and Zooey Deschanel, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was awesome.
That was hysterical.
Wasn't it?
Well, and it wasn't necessarily a crossover, more so like New Girl showed up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine for about 5 minutes, but yeah, that was pretty great.
Well, she needed his help. That's crossover.
No, he needed a ride.
There's two crossovers.
Oh.
Really?
Shit. Yeah.
You just got checked.
I must have missed an episode then.
Yeah. While you're on your Google search right now, go find it.
I'll tell you one.
I can come back and be like, with the magic of editing, I suddenly know what's going on.
Right.
I can tell you one, John. You already forgot. I'm actually kind of surprised. Oh. The DC crossovers.
I was going to bring that up.
Oh, yeah, now, because you were out there searching, like, best crossovers ever. Oh, well, DC is the first one.
I also am not going to show up to this party with 15 crossovers in my pocket to be like, look at me. I'm just going to keep talking all night long.
I feel like that was
one
very
mibibibi,
slighted.
Two mibibibi.
Very pointed.
You think?
Somebody feeling a little seen right now?
Yeah, I feel a little naked right now.
Did you feel like I do, because I don't watch those shows, but I did watch the crossovers because they're always really fun. Are you like that?
No, the crossover is like the best thing of those shows. So exactly. Every single time they do the crossover, okay, I'm in.
Do they make sense if you're not watching those other shows, though?
Mostly. Yeah.
Mostly. They're their own stories.
I never watched the DC ones because I wasn't caught up on the shows. So I was like, well, there's no point in me
watching.
As
long as you know who the heroes are, you can figure the rest of it out.
Oh, well, now I'm going to go watch them.
They're kind of like a way to entice you to check out the other shows.
Smart.
I don't think it ever works, but.
Smart.
Not smart. It never really works because then I might watch another episode of Arrow and then realize that show should have been canceled like 10 years ago. So.
Well, it's getting canceled now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bye.
I've got this is one of my favorite crossovers I've ever seen is when the X-Files went on Cops.
I knew it.
Oh my God.
That was so amazing. They hope they can get some public support for their research into the paranormal and stuff. And it's like, and they're on Cops the whole time. It's just like, it's the weirdest crossover that should never work. And it was, I believe it was written by Vince Gilligan, who did Breaking
Bad.
No
way! Yeah.
And it's just one of the best, most crossovers I'm not a fan of. I really just don't. I always find it weird. Unless they do something that's just out there. You know, I mean, Law and Order, it kind of works because it's just the exact same shows. So you really can't even tell any difference. But usually I don't really see the point unless you're taking me into something I wouldn't normally watch. And I never would watch Cops. That made me interested in Cops. I'm like, Cops kind of looks fun. Never was. It was never fun as that episode. But it was still got me to check it out. And then there was a Murder, She Wrote, a Magnum P.I. crossover.
That's brilliant.
Do you remember that? Did you ever watch
yes,
that?
Yes, I do.
It was one of those things where they didn't make any sense at all to be together. Like, they just did not make any sense. And it shouldn't have worked in any respect, but it did because Angela Lansbury and Tom Selleck are amazing. And
yeah,
what I don't even know why it worked, but I loved it.
Now, Sci-Fi used to do this crossover from two of their shows, Eureka and Warehouse 13. And watching those was always fun because the way to make those two shows that have nothing in common with each other, where one's about artifacts that are cursed and the other one's about crazy scientific stuff, and to make them both work together was always interesting to watch.
All right, let's get crazy. You guys, we're going to do a little game. We're going to create our own TV shows or create a crossover, basically. But we're going to use our crossovers to make a whole different show. You can cross over any TV property you want. We're each going to do three. But you have to give it a show name. So you're basically crossing them over, giving it a new show name. Got it?
Got it.
Got it? I didn't know I had to sign the terms and conditions here.
Okay. Amanda, you can go first. We're going to go round robin. So one, and then we'll do our second, and then we'll do our third.
Okay. So I'm actually meshing in my first one three different properties.
Okay.
There was no limit.
No, there wasn't a limit.
So I'm meshing Alias, 24, and The Blacklist.
Yeah, you're speaking my language.
Set in the 24 world. Jack Bauer identifies a U.S. terrorist, which just so happens to be someone Reddington from The Blacklist is after. The two FBI teams begin to work together to find this person before their next attack. So they've already made one attack. When the CIA learns of this information, they approach Bauer and Harold Cooper to inform them that they are going to be taking on this case with Sidney Bristow leading the investigation, as this is now an international matter. Now we've got a switch. But after the FBI offers themselves to contribute to the case because of the significance to them, Bristow decides to allow them to assist under one condition. She makes all the final calls. And this show would be called The Caveat.
It's like girl power.
Well, it was just a way to combine all these awesome TV shows that work in the same kind of world, but we never see them obviously interact.
I like it.
And Alias, she gets to lead it because she's so cool.
I have one caveat to your show.
Did I get something wrong?
24 is not the FBI. It's CTU.
Shoot.
That's okay.
I looked up the other ones, though.
Quick change, but I just know people are screaming.
I don't even know what that means, though.
Counterterrorism.
Isn't it all the same anyway?
No.
Okay, so there's the FBI, because I Googled
Jack
some of
Bauer
this stuff.
Jack Bauer has his own set of rules.
So there's FBI, there's CIA, and then there's, where's this?
It's not a real thing.
Okay, that's why I didn't find it online.
Oh, boy.
I always thought it was just the FBI when I watched it, so.
Anyway. I mean, they only said CTU every single episode.
They did, but I just thought that was like their little division within the FBI.
It is. It's their own division of individual thing.
That's funny.
All right. So I'm going to be very chauvinistic with my first one.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's been a while. Jiggle TV hasn't been a thing in a long time, and I miss it. I'm going to be honest. There's a lot of guys out there who are like, we're not allowed to say it anymore, and I understand, but we miss it. Just like you guys like to watch shirtless guys all the time. We like to watch women in bikinis, right? I don't mind
watching women in bikinis either.
Okay. So there are two things I love. Beautiful, ass-kicking ladies and Hawaii, right?
That sounds like a good combination so far.
So I want to combine Hawaii 5-0 with Charlie's Angels.
Ooh.
Three intelligent, fierce, and gorgeous cops are given the freedom from Governor Charlie Garrett to patrol the islands and bring down criminals wherever they may roam with a variety of swimsuit options. It's called Charlie's 5-0.
I'm so, still on board.
Yeah. I don't watch either one of those two shows. I'll watch that.
See? Ah, making money. That's how we do it. That's how we do it in Hollywood. Jiggle TV is back.
All right. So my very first one is Parks and the Walking Dead. Ron Swanson leads a park of...
This is great.
Ron Swanson leads the Parks Department during the zombie outbreak. Leslie Knope is an overachieving slaughterer of zombies, effectively protecting the group from zombies, boredom, and red tape and bureaucracy. Andy Dwyer is still a lovable goofball, but... he's now a zombie. But he doesn't bite anybody because he just loves... He's still Andy, and he still just loves everyone. He just, like, slobbers more. His wife, April Ludgate, still loves him and only him and hates everything else. Tom Haverford creates a business out of managing zombies, and everything is still Jerry's fault because, well, he's Jerry. Even though he's out there with Daryl and Michonne saving the world.
I mean, I was sold when you said Parks.
What are you calling it?
Parks and the Walking Dead.
Parks and the Walking Dead. All right. I would watch that.
Yeah. So sold.
You should probably do it with Walking Dead now. You might get some viewers back.
Well, my second one is combination of Sharp Objects and The Sinner.
Oh, those are two really good limited series.
Mm-hmm. The third season of The Sinner would feature another disturbing murder, a young girl who murdered her sister and two best friends. As a journalist, after hearing about Detective Ambrose's case, Camille Preaker decides to find Detective Ambrose and is asked to assist with the case and cover it. He obviously resists at first, but after she shares her experience with her sister Emma, he finally allows it and the two team up together.
Mm.
And this would be called... Okay, so I have two different titles because I couldn't think of anything really clever.
Sharp Sinners?
No. The Luckless Sinner was the first option.
The what?
The Luckless. There's a lot of environmental factors that happen in Sharp Objects that make the murderer in that series shaped by their... They developed over time and were shaped into that murderer. I guess that's the easiest way to explain it without spoiling anything.
Yeah. I like that.
And the other option for title is Metamorphosis, leading back to that development and changing over time.
I like
The Luckless Sinner.
Metamorphosis.
Oh, really? Better. Okay. Mm. All right.
What is it? Well, John's got a vote.
Okay.
Oh, I'm here still?
You're always
Metamorphosis.
Here.
I like that better.
Oh, okay. I didn't expect you guys to go for that one.
Well, that's what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So my second one, I love the time constraints of 24. So 24 gets two references. Yes.
Dang.
One of the best shows ever on television. And I also love Jack Bauer's intensity. I also love the medical complexities of House and how he would be the only doctor who could solve cases. So I would make House the hospital administrator, and a new hotshot doctor arrives on the scene in the form of former CTU agent Jack Bauer. He's sick of working for CTU. He wants to come work for them. He also has a doctorate. I don't know how he got that, but he got it. Each episode, a patient comes to the Princeton Plainsboro Teaching Hospital with a mysterious illness. House frantically attempts to find the medical cure, while Jack Bauer prefers to find answers in the field by researching similar illnesses and brutalizing former victims for answers. Each week is a race against time to find the cure and see who can get there first. I call it taking it to the house.
That's funny. I like that. I like that he's still interrogating people. Like, I hope he waterboards like a child or something to really push the boundaries.
Chloe, show me the prescriptions.
She's definitely an assistant. Absolutely.
Right. All right. So my next one. Spend the day at the Westworld's weirdest sheriff's office. Who's a host? Who's an actual person having a great vacation? You'll never know. Investigate crimes with robotic Sheriff Holt and his overly animated deputy Peralta, and as they solve crimes such as cattle rustling, stagecoach holdups. Overly built deputy sheriff Jeffries and minuscule Boyle keep fights from happening at places like saloons. This I call Westworld 99.
It's like you're making these shows with my heart in mind. No, you're not.
I don't like 99, so I can't. But I'd watch it just because I like the idea that you're shaking it up there, Johnny. I would watch it.
I would watch it. As soon as I heard Holt, I was like, okay.
I don't even know who those characters are.
The twist would be he's not a host.
Interesting.
Yeah, because you would think with his demeanor that he would be a host. He's very robotic in his
mannerisms. What's your title for that?
Was Westworld 99.
Westworld 99. All right.
It's like a whole little room area. Not room, but one. You know what I mean?
It's a whole section of the park?
Yeah. That's the right words.
All right. Amanda, what's your last one?
My last one combines Stranger Things and the Umbrella Academy. Number 5 goes back in time to learn about his birth in 1989 and encounter something supernatural and strange. At the same time, the Stranger Things kids are encountering the change after an experiment gone awry. The two collide, and it's determined that the Umbrella Academy was born from the Stranger Things experiment. And I titled this The Beginning.
Huh. All right. Get on board with that. I'm sure John would, because anything Stranger Things, he's like, I'm in.
Yeah, and Umbrella Academy at this point.
You're welcome. I made that for you.
You guys are really loving that much? That show?
The Umbrella Academy? I didn't finish it, so I don't really know. But I thought it would be a cool idea.
Like, you need a second season? Loved it? Or
yeah.
Okay.
No, that is something from Netflix I will take a second season from. Not like The Haunting of Hill House.
You're crazy. I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Me too.
I'm interested to see what they do. I didn't need a second season of it after the first. But now that I hear what they're doing for the second, I'm like, oh, okay, you have me. You have my attention. But like Umbrella Academy, I love those characters. I want to see more from them.
All right. So my last one, I want to merge Jason Bateman into the single greatest series of his career. We're going to take the story, look, and circumstances of Ozark.
Okay.
But instead of that family, it's the Bluth family. trying to stay alive by cleaning drug money in the Ozarks. So you still have George Michael, Bluth Sr., Lucille, Buster, Lindsay, George, etc. Everybody from Arrested Development. And of course, you have their attorney be Barry Zuckerhorn. I just think it would be fun to see the Bluth family navigate that hell. My guess is they'd all be dead in minutes. And I would call it Ozark, colon, in development.
While your title is super clever, an absolute hell no because of Arrested Development.
Because you don't like that show?
I never liked that show.
That's okay. We don't like Grey's Anatomy.
That's okay.
Keep bringing it up.
I barely like Grey's Anatomy myself anyway. That's why I stopped watching it.
So you punish yourself for 14 years until you finally came to the 15th? You're like, you know what? I finally realized I like myself more than this.
There was just a lot of emotional trauma you had to deal with.
All right, so for my next one, my final shot at this, April Ludgate takes a hit to the head, and all of a sudden she sees a sweet, adorable, overly enthusiastic, tiny unicorn. The unicorn is there to help because her husband, Andy Dwyer, is in trouble and needs to be saved from a sadistic monster, Santa Claus, out there kidnapping children and selling them on the black market. This I call happy recreation.
So basically, you only took 4 shows total for all 3 of your shows and just crossed them all over together.
Well, I also have Superstore 1 with Lost, and I have a Winchester and Castle 1. I also have those because, like, I didn't know how many we needed for tonight.
I thought about doing Moonlighting and Castle.
That's the same show.
Exactly.
You don't have to cross it over. It's the same show.
Shame show?
Yeah, it's a shame show, Sam. See? Yeah. All right. Well, so do we have any listener crossovers that we have? We recorded this early, so there aren't as many as normal, but what do we have?
First up is Tracy Cook. She said, I feel like a good potential crossover series would be Olivia Pope from Scandal crossing over to Parks and Rec. Leslie Knope thinks Pope takes life too seriously and is always trying to prank her.
What is it with Parks and Rec?
It's a great show. Spectacular. After the first season. First season is rough. It's like six episodes,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, see, you just screwed up. You should have just stopped.
It's only six episodes. Just literally skip the first season.
You cannot win me over with, you got to watch a season first.
You did that with Breaking Bad for me.
Breaking Bad caught me. Okay, take my words out of it.
All right, so Nate Bruce says, I'd like to see Nick Sachs and Happy from the show Happy to end up in the basement with Jack Malloy and Mr. Floppy and from Unhappily Ever After, just to see the interaction and hear Bobcat Goldthwait and Patton Oswalt titled Horsing Around.
All right. Is that a show? Unhappily Ever After? I don't...
Yeah, it's a... Like, Mr. Floppy was a puppet that would only react when one person was around. Yeah, it's a show.
Is that a sitcom?
Yes.
I don't watch sitcoms. I feel so dumb sometimes because people will talk to me about it and I'm like... Yeah, Night Court, man, that's really the last sitcom I watched every episode of. That's the last one. And that was in the 80s. It's just not...
I forgive you.
It's just not, you know, it's not my thing.
If it's not your thing, it's not your
thing. It's okay. They're not really my thing either, but there's the occasional one that catches my attention, like Parks and Rec or Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I don't have any interest in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I saw a bunch of episodes and I'm like, Terry Crews is the only thing. And Andrea Brower, I like him a lot. I just don't like the lead. What's his name?
Andy Samberg.
Yeah, Andy Samberg. He's trying so hard to be as funny as the other ones, and I never find him funny. Now, on the other hand, Parks and Rec, everybody in that cast I love. I've just, watched a couple of episodes. I'm like, I don't get it. But that one I might, if I can just start in season two and I still understand what's going on.
You can.
Okay. Then I'll try that.
When I started watching the show, I watched the first like two episodes and I was like, I'm never going to get to seeing the people that I want in this show if I keep watching this, because I did not like the first season. So I skipped to season two and started watching in season two and finished the series. And then went back to season one and was like, I'll just watch those episodes just to see if I missed anything. And really you don't.
I'll try that again though, because I don't mind doing that. People seem to love it, and I know they just had a panel, and people are just losing their mind at PaleyFest. So
cool.
That's good news. All right, so the last one, Troy Heinrich says, mad scientist Walter Bishop from Fringe travels between universes in an RV, Breaking Bad, to traffic his new drug line to the other side, since this universe has become tolerant to his drug effects in Bishop's burners.
So it's Breaking Bad mixed with what now?
Fringe.
Oh, Fringe. That's why I don't understand, because I've not seen Fringe.
Fringe is a great show for three seasons, and then it just falls off a cliff.
They took it off streaming, so I haven't watched it.
I haven't finished it. I got through season...
Oh, really?
Almost through season four, and I left it and never came back to it because it just started getting too weird for its own good.
Yikes.
Yeah. Not in a bad way. I mean, it's not bad, just not for me. All right, so that does it for our topic this week. We're going to close up. We're going to get to us here in a minute. But first, is there any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about, guys, that you want to mention? I haven't watched anything because I was too busy dropping names.
No.
Right now on HBO, you have The Case Against Adnan Syed. It's based off of the season one of the Powerhouse podcast Serial. And if you were following that case and followed anything from that point on, from Serial to Undisclosed and all that, you don't have to be that far into that whole background to be able to enjoy the documentary they're putting out. It's beautifully done. They're doing a very good job of reminding us that there is a victim. And not only is there a victim, but there is somebody who could or could not be wrongfully imprisoned for the crime. It's three episodes in, fantastically done, beautifully shot. They've done some amazing work, and there's at least one oh crap moment in every single episode. Also, Netflix just dropped season two of the OA. That show has quickly becoming top two of my favorite Netflix shows ever made. It's so
really
batshit crazy. There's just so many things that, like, there's a talking octopus, and you're kind of like, okay, well, whatever. I mean, yeah, talking octopus, I'm in. I can do this. Like, what else you got? And everything from that point on, like, you can really buy into how ridiculous it is, but also how real it is. I just love what they've done with that show. I love how brave they are, and I love the kind of storytelling they're doing. So, and the ending of it, though it was a cliffhanger, it's a really interesting ending.
Well, I did watch the first episode of The Act, which is on Hulu. You probably have seen a lot of people raving about this show. I've
never even heard of it.
Really?
There's so much content!
That's true. Well, basically, this is a true crime anthology series that they have on Hulu. It's based on the real life of Gypsy Rose Blanchard and the murder of her mother, Dee Dee Blanchard, who was accused of abusing her daughter by fabricating illness and disabilities as a direct consequence of Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Wow.
It's messed up. But I will say that I'm only on the first episode. It was really messed up, but it was still bearable to get through. I didn't feel too uncomfortable, but from what I've read online, it will make you uncomfortable at some point. But the acting is really great. Joey King is awesome.
Oh, so it's not a documentary.
No, this
is dramatization of
it. Yeah, exactly.
And the story of, if you want to see the documentary, HBO has a documentary on it.
It's got Patricia Arquette as her mom, which is like intense. Awesome acting too. So
I wish I would. All I want to watch is Motley Crue's The Dirt, and I haven't had any time to watch it. I'm just so excited.
I can't wait. I've been trying to make time for that too.
I am doing that soon. We are taking the week off next week. So before we get to us, because some people won't listen to that because obviously you haven't seen the movie or you don't want to be spoiled, whatever. We are going to be gone. I already mentioned that. But during that time, I am going to watch Motley Crue's The Dirt. So I'm going on record now as, even though I haven't seen it, it's going to be amazing. I feel it in my I feel it in my soul. And I can actually right now recite Dr. Feelgood for the entire verse, the entire song, if you'd like. Just ad lib.
Give us one verse.
No. Don't do it.
Jigsaw Jimmy's running the gang. I won't do it. All right. So thank you guys for listening. We're gonna go ahead and jump into our Us Spoiler Cast. But before you do, you can comment on this episode in our Facebook group. We are doing this really, really early and kind of rushed from where we were going to do it. So I hope you understand that. Last week's episode was our South by Southwest. If you have not checked that out, please do. We put a lot of love and work into that episode. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. Our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn, and TheHollywoodOutsider.com is our website address. Please tell your friends. If you do like our show, if you like an episode, share that episode, share the podcast itself. Let people know on social media that you really like the show, because it's becoming harder and harder for people to find the podcast, especially in this 4 billion podcast universe. So thank you.
Did you know that you can directly share the episode onto your social media from Spotify if you're a Spotify listener? You can even put it on your Instagram and people just have to click the button and then it'll take them to that episode.
Instagram story. You can make us a story that you tell your friends. Yeah. There's your story. Speaking of stories, let's go ahead and get into us. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, and me and my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed. Amanda's also on Veronica's Marshmallows. I forgot about that one.
Don't forget about that one.
I won't forget about that one. You got an interview coming up with Francis Capra. Capra or Capra?
Capra.
Are you sure?
I don't know. Now I need to check.
I've heard it both ways.
I have too.
Before you interview him, you should probably get that down.
I'm gonna.
All right, guys. Remember, the next time you enter a theater, buy popcorn. Now, let's talk about us.
Okay, let's call the cops.
I did. They're 14 minutes away.
What? 14 minutes? Okay. Jason, give me the bat.
What bat?
The baseball bat, the bat. There's one in the
corner. Here.
Thank you.
Gabe.
All right, hold on. I got this. Let's try this again.
Gabe.
No. All right.
Gabe.
I got this. Now, I thought I already done told y'all to get off my property, okay? So if y'all want to get crazy, we can get crazy. Now the cops are already on their way. Hey!
Okay, we're not going to warn you again. Be wary of spoilers. This is a spoiler cast. In order to get away from their busy lives, the Wilson family takes a vacation to Santa Cruz, California, with the plan of spending some time with their friends, the Tyler family. On a day at the beach, their young son, Jason, almost wanders off, causing his mother, Adelaide, to become protective of her family. That night, four mysterious people break into Adelaide's childhood home where they're staying. The family is shocked to find out that the intruders look and talk like them, only with grotesque appearances. Directed by Jordan Peele, the film stars Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and Elizabeth Moss. And I do want to point out before we get into it, there is a prominent Bible verse to us. You guys remember this part?
Yep, sure do.
Yep.
Jeremiah 11:11. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. And though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. Jeremiah was a prophet and warned the Jews in exile in Babylon that God wasn't happy that they were worshiping false idols, and that it could lead to all sorts of misery and eventually the fall of Jerusalem. The movie seems to be revolving around the class for the haves and the have-nots. That kind of alludes to that a little bit. Okay, all that, I just want to get out of the way. We've been pumped for this movie for months. Did Us live up to your expectations, or did its story disappoint? Let's discuss.
Well, I would say that I came into it a little bit disappointed, or came out of it a little disappointed. But I think part of that is my expectations were maybe a little bit too high. Maybe I was a little too pumped. I still think it was very creative.
Do you feel like that's fair? I mean, isn't it okay to have high expectations of something?
No, I think it is okay. But I also realized that I tend to enjoy movies a little bit more when I don't go in with such heavy expectations. I'm just setting myself up for failure. So, but I still think it was creative. I still think that the performances were amazing. Lupita was spectacular in both of her roles, you know, both her and as Red. And, you know, it was great. But I still think that the execution could have been done a little bit better. And I really hope that Jordan Peele from here on out decides to give less away. I felt like it was a little too predictable at times. That bothered me because I am normally not somebody who picks up on stuff.
Let's get into that part, because both you and John, I mean, you can allude to what did you think real quick before I go into my soliloquy.
I really didn't go into this with a lot of expectations. I really enjoyed Get Out, but it's just one movie. I didn't have anything to sit there and say that this was going to be an amazing thing or it was going to be great. Was I looking forward to it? Yeah, but the expectations I went into were middle of the road, and I left with feeling like it was a middle of the road movie.
I liked it. I mean, I liked it. I, you and John both said that this was predictable. Okay, so I got to ask, what about it was predictable? I think we can all agree that we felt Lupita was, you know, the character we saw her was actually the girl that got switched at the beginning, right? We can all agree on that?
Right.
Okay, so that's a predictable
nature.
It was
way too easy.
Because you guys both said predictable. I'm like, how do you predict the tethered thing? That's very original. That's a unique idea.
No. Yeah, and, you know, one of the things I said was that I thought that the idea behind of it was original. Like, the tethering was original. The way that whole people living underground thing, that was mostly an original idea. The story was original. The step-by-step of it, though, they go to their friend's house. Oh, look, their friends are dead. Because, of course, they're dead. That's the way the story was going to go. Of course, these creatures got into the house and nobody knows how. Of course, the boat turns right back around and picks them up. And like, there's a lot of things that were just, of course, that's the way it's going to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't recall feeling like I understood the magnitude of how intense this was. But I also understood at the very beginning when she's sitting in front of that TV and she's watching The Hands of America, that there was going to be something to relate to that because he focused on it for so dang long. And I saw the child Lupita in the reflection. I saw the baby Adelaide. So I knew that there was the connection between The Hands of America and the little Adelaide, which almost instantly when I saw the mirror thing and she was in the, what was the name of that room that she was in on the beach? On the boardwalk.
Well, it's Merlin later.
Yeah.
It was a shaman.
It was an Indian. No, it wasn't an Indian thing, right?
Yeah, it was the shaman's forest.
Okay. There you go. When she went into the shaman's forest, I knew that there was the switching there that happened. And also she made like noises as an adult. I was like, why is she making, you know what I mean? So there was a lot of that stuff that was very predictable in that respect. But I didn't understand that it was going to be that all of them were connected to each other, that there was like a whole community below the surface living together
Yeah, that was, I mean,
that's the part okay. that was,
well, because
you know,
when I hear predict, I'm like, how do you predict that? Because that was a really, really cool idea. I'm not saying the execution was great, but it was a very cool idea and it was unique and it was original. And I was like, wow, that's a real mind fuck of ideas. And, but still not as great as it could have been.
Yeah, the execution failed a little.
And that's where the predictableness shows up. It's a progression of steps where there is no other place where it could have gone when it does go there. It's like, yeah, all right, I've seen this before. I've seen this part before. But yes, the underlying story, that was something new and different, and that was pretty great.
For sure. And he deserves a lot of credit for cultivating something that unique, especially from getting, because I was reading about where he kind of got this idea. He saw the commercial, happened to come across the Hands Across America commercial on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's where he got this idea from and spectated from that point. What? You saw a commercial for Hands Across America on YouTube and created this giant idea? Like, I think it really speaks to his writing of what he's able to kind of create from something as simple as that. Because I don't think many of us would look back at the 80s and be like, oh, yeah, that Hands Across America commercial could really make for an interesting story.
Or just how high it was at the time.
Does he smoke weed? I don't know.
I don't know.
Probably. It's America.
I don't know. He's an entertainer in Hollywood. Maybe. So
I don't think I'm qualified to say whether or not he does, but maybe.
This movie makes me assume that he's probably, definitely token a little bit. It's been said, so you brought up him as a writer, and he's a great writer, and it's pretty amazing that a few years ago he was only known as like Key and Peele.
Yeah.
Pete and Keele. That's a totally different show. And that's Cinemax After Dark. But he came along with Get Out, surprised everybody, and now he's been put on this path. And I kind of want to know, like, after this movie, if you guys really feel that he is reinvigorating the way horror stories are told. Do you feel like after this one, he's the director to beat in horror right now? Has he become a John Carpenter or Spielberg or one of those names where you could actually put his name above the title and it would make you see his movie?
There's the old adage. You have two can be a coincidence, but three isn't a coincidence. It's a pattern. So if the next time he releases something and that turns out to be great, then yeah, I'll be able to say that he is a director to go see. But right now, two things coming out and they're both pretty good or good. I would say it could be a coincidence. Once he does three, then that's a pattern.
I have to say that I agree with the Johnny in some respect, but I also disagree because
what a totally Amanda thing to say.
He is showing me that he is able to be clever and creative and really step outside normal boundaries. And I'm not seeing that in a lot of screenwriters or directors at this point. People are not taking the chances that he's willing to take with his movies and really think about them, because he's making movies that make people want to go back and see it again in case there was something that they missed. And it's almost a little Hitchcockian in some ways. And I'm not saying he's a Hitchcock filmmaker.
If I hear one more person compare him to Hitchcock, I am going to lose it.
He has put a lot of subtleties from his other movies in there, and that's what I'm referencing. I'm not saying that he's as creative as a filmmaker as Hitchcock. We don't have enough work to even make that comparison. But he is very innovative with his techniques, with his writing, that makes me want to watch him. I know he's working on Candyman, and I want to see that. That's something I'm going to see because I know his name is attached to it. So for me, yes, I am already tied to seeing what he's going to do next, because you have to give people the opportunity to not meet your expectations and grow and become better. He doesn't have that much on his credits for directing and writing and everything in this realm of genre. Once he has those building blocks, I'm excited to see what he's able to do once he has more experience built up underneath him and is able to look at his prior films and say, you know what, this might not have worked. I can make some adjustments going forward from here. But so far, he's very, the work he's making, I'm enjoying. Mm-hmm. And he is making the horror genre in genre reimagined in a way.
We don't need L's. They're
in
ridiculous.
And it's giving them a place to be part of the community. I mean, when we're talking about how he got an award for Get Out through the Oscars and how he's just everything he's doing is making a conversation with horror movies again. and creative new ideas in the horror genre. And I have a lot of respect for somebody who's able to do that and get people that I know did not like horror movies into watching these types of movies and enjoying them.
I'm just a fan of his ideas. I really believe people are jumping the gun on the whole he's the best thing ever, the newest best thing ever. You know, Christopher Nolan and that sort of thing. I really believe in what John said. You got to hit three. Mm-hmm. And this is really not a hit for me. This is more of a, it was good. I mean, it was good. But it was closer to not good than it was great to me. Does that make sense? I mean, to me, the idea is great. I've seen a lot of movies where the ideas were great. The execution wasn't. This is one of those. The idea is fascinating. Unfortunately, there's a 15-minute exposition dump at the end, which is kind of what he did in Get Out. He kind of made a similar misstep to me in Get Out, where everything is explained at the end. Great concept, but you gotta, as a writer, as a director, find a better way to layer that. So it isn't just coming at you all at once, and it's just a big, long, I have to have a character tell me everything that's happening. That's not how a movie should flow, in my opinion. So, I mean, that's part of how I watch movies. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying. To me, that was a problem. The opening half hour was kind of a problem because the pace was really sluggish. Mm-hmm. You have a whole minute where you're trying to be a 70s avant-garde director because you have to show this long pullback of bunnies. Got it. It was too long. That felt like 20 minutes alone. So there's some pacing. There's a few things that definitely need to be touched up. He's a director. Well, I want to see what he does, but your trailer was better than your movie to me. And that's where I would like to see him in the future address that. And I worry that because of the instant success that he's gotten in the last two movies, that's not going to be addressed. The exposition thing is a big problem because now I've seen it in two movies, and that makes the list, me take him off the list a little bit. Because I'm like, if that's the only way you can get these great ideas across, you're missing the point of a visual medium.
He didn't even need to do the exposition because it was, I believe it was so well understood. I don't know if I'm in the minority here. I don't know what the Google search history is.
I got it.
But there was no need for any additional explanation. I didn't need for the two characters to have the conversation and go back and see the swap. I didn't need all of that. It was not necessary to me. So I agree with you that there is some work to be done. And hopefully that's what him producing new ideas will do, is he's creating original ideas. And
the movie would have been so much more stronger if they left like that swap more of a, did it happen or did it not? Like, they've left you wondering more about it. That would have been a much better thing to do with it. And I completely agree. This whole idea where you have a character telling us everything. We were just talking about Matrix, where there's a lot in that first movie where they showed us and they used visual storytelling to tell us that story, where then we have this and it's not doing that at all. You have a character telling it to us in kind of a ridiculous voice, though well acted, it's still a ridiculous voice to be using for it. Tell us everything. So yeah, I mean, there we go.
Let's talk about the voice for Red, because that's where you and Amanda seem to be against me. I really dug that choice. You guys did not. Why, John, you just brought it up. So why don't you like that voice? Why do you think it's ridiculous? I thought it was really interesting.
It reminded me of like when we're kids and we want to make a monster voice and we
start talking like this and we start doing this.
It kind of reminded me a lot of that.
That was really good.
Yeah, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can ever do that again, but it reminded me of something like a kid would do. And now it's and though, yes, it could be something explained away as she was stunted, being left in the ground the way she was with a bunch of people who don't talk. Her she was stunted at the age of 8 or 9, and sure, she's going to act like an 8 or 9 year old still. I guess, oh, God damn it, I just talked myself into liking it.
Well, don't you think that it would have been...
That's the best argument ever. John just lost his own argument
to himself. Okay, but John, listen to me. Here's your voice of reason.
She's trying to win you back.
Wouldn't you think that it would be more beneficial for her to not fake this really deep monster voice that crackles and maybe just do something where it's obvious that she is almost suffocating trying to talk?
Wouldn't that give away what they're trying not to give away, though?
She didn't need to do the monster voice is what I'm talking about. She didn't need to change the actual pitch of her voice and deepen it and make it like a very dark monster voice. It could still crackle and she still...
And just talk a little bit like this.
She could still where she was like...
This is how she talked in the movie.
She didn't need to sound like an old dying man.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I'm on the side of liking it now. So that, I mean... That sucks.
No, it was so
That's how you
cheesy.
Win arguments. Just get people telling other people why they didn't like something. And eventually they might talk themselves back into it.
I felt so forced.
So to you, when she's doing that, that took you out of the moment every time she did it?
Yep. 100%. And I thought her performance was spectacular, but that drew me away. And it just felt like she was overacting it. And I don't think that she was overacting it. I think that was the direction that Peele wanted her to be in. But I also, in my soul, realized that was a bad choice. I genuinely...
Wait, soul? Why are we even bringing up souls here?
Because if it would have been more beneficial, in my opinion, if it would have just been a normal crackle where her voice is like a whisper, almost, and then her voice comes and goes. Because she didn't sound like a demon when she was a child. Nobody else seemed to sound like a demon. They just had, they did the...
No,
they explained
thing.
Her voice.
I know why her voice is the way it is. I understand that. I still think that you could make a better choice of a sound. The way it was portrayed drove me nuts. I don't need you to sound like a demon for you to be creepy.
All right. I got this, Aaron.
Okay.
You're wrong.
Ooh. Hmm.
No, because it's my opinion.
Oh boy. It's barn in the parking lot. The one thing about the voice that I found pretty funny, because I talked to a bunch of people about this movie, which here's the thing, even though I didn't love the movie, I mean, it's a good movie, not great, not bad. Okay. So I like the movie. No matter how I felt about the quality of the film, it is a movie you can talk to your friends about, which is always a good thing. Right?
For sure.
And the voice to me was one thing a lot of people that I've talked to didn't get the twist that, you know, but we watch a lot more movies than a lot of people. So I try to be conscious of that. Some people didn't get that, you know, they switched places or they didn't think that happened.
What?
And I'm sitting here going, like, Red is the only character that can talk from the tethered. Nobody else talks. I mean, I thought that was a complete giveaway right there. Am I the only one that felt that way or am I just being kind of.
No.
Okay. So no.
They also thoroughly explain it, like way too much explain it. I don't understand how somebody could come out of that movie and not understand, if you're not a movie person.
They understood it by the end. I'm saying like throughout the movie.
Oh, okay.
Throughout
right,
the movie,
right,
they didn't.
Right. I was like, they literally show you and walk you through step by step how it happened.
I 100% believe in John's version of the, like, that wasn't even something that I really, really thought about until you just said it, John. That is something that I do believe could have made the movie a lot better. Just don't tell us. Maybe she gives her son a smile and he looks a little concerned and puts his mask back on and has that moment. That might have made it.
That would have been awesome.
Let it kind of like be in the top in Inception. You just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's up
to
you.
Because like the whole reason why that makes sense, that the thing is so much more powerful is that you realize that the person who saw her make all her actual kills with her was her son. So he saw her acting more animalistic with each one of her kills, and so that's why he has that look of incredulity at the end, and it makes it seem that him just pulling down his mask and seeing more powerful.
Also, there's a fun theory on the child that I've really kind of grown attached to.
People with their theories, man, they come up with some crazy ass
things. Dude, they have evidence. Like, for real.
Yeah, and they also have evidence as to how Endgame's going to end and everything else.
No.
What is the theory?
The theory is that the child is also a swap at this point. Because something to do, and I don't remember where exactly it happened, if it was the fire or what, or if it was
not
before the fire.
Possible.
It is possible.
How?
The idea is that it's a different child, and that's why the child doesn't say anything to Adelaide / Red, however you want to, you know, verse it. Lupita's character at the very end and pulls his mask down because he realizes that the swap was all done. I don't know. I'm not saying I completely believe in
it. I think it's a ridiculous
theory. But it's still a really interesting... That's what
No, there's no point in the story where he's not with somebody else as that's part of the family. There's no point where he's alone where they can make that swap. Plus, the other kid was just bopping around making noises. It was pretty evident that that...
And also had a burned face.
And had a burned face, which they showed right before he died in the fire.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So that internet theory is dumb.
Son of a biscuit.
She knows. She just wanted to try to buy into it and make us try to believe it. But she knows. You can actually hear it in her voice.
I told you I didn't believe it, but it was still a cool idea. A cool theory.
But it's not a cool idea because it's impossible.
But it was still a cool theory if it would have happened in the movie. If at the end it would have been the other kid.
Okay, but it's, I mean, he shows his face like, hey, check out my burn marks. Now I'm going to back up in the fire. Can I explain that to me? Why is...
I don't believe that could happen.
Why is it nobody control movements, but then suddenly this kid's backing up and suddenly they're control? I mean, I know he mimicked them a couple times, but to back all the way up into the fire because the other kid backed all the way up, that didn't make any sense to me. That felt like a break in movie rules.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's another one of those. That's one of those moments where it kind of pulls me out because, sure they show it, but maybe they can explain it away as far as saying that because the upside down version of him was still so young, he didn't have the level of autonomy as the older versions.
That's a good explain away. But the thing is, why
makes
wouldn't the sister didn't have it? Nobody else had this. I mean, they did have the pole when they were down, when they were separated. So when they show you the people up above and the people down below, everything they did, they were, even if they were making out, they were making those same motions.
But once they were up on the earth level, that stopped, right?
Because for whatever reason,
it happening anymore.
We don't have any explanation why that tether breaks when they go up there, but yet still is very connected from the very beginning of when the two boys, Pluto and I forgot the Jason, the real
Jason.
Kid's name.
Yeah.
When the two are around each other, they do mimic each other where he'll like lift his hand and his hand goes up or whatever.
Right.
And the fire and all that
it
stuff.
It happened a couple of times. But I mean, the fact that he can back all the way up into the fire and then completely be consumed by fire and that doesn't even shock him out of it was a little bit of, it just felt like breaking the movie rules.
Well,
that the movie himself had set up.
I didn't even feel like it was just that moment that broke the rules. I thought it was those two characters being that tethered through the entire movie that broke the rules because nobody else has that tethering above surface that they do.
See, that's where I'm kind of on John's side. I believe the age comes into play.
Oh, it's a great breakout, but they don't ever explain that or allude to it.
I mean, I don't need everything. I mean, they did explain every single thing else.
But. Right, but you're not going to explain that.
Right. Yeah.
We didn't have time to explain the age thing.
I like it, though. That's a good solution. It works.
It is, but I hate that we have to look for a solution for a movie problem.
Yes and no.
Well, I mean, if you're going to overthink it, then you have to actually overthink both sides of it.
Oh, whatever, Johnny. Get out of here with your common sense.
You got to be fair with your overthinking.
You know how sometimes things line up?
Yeah.
You know, like coincidences. Since we've been here, they've been happening more and more. I feel like it means like she's getting closer.
Who? The mirror girl?
You don't believe me.
I do. I do. I'm processing. Okay? I just can't believe you kept all this inside for so long. You know I'm here, right?
All right, so the cast and standouts. I mean, I'm 100% on board with Lupita, but apparently Amanda feels different because of the voice.
No, I'm not saying that her performance was... I don't really genuinely don't believe it has anything to do with Lupita. I think that's the way she was directed, and I put that on Jordan
Peele. No, that was her
Peele.
Choice. That was her choice. She chose that voice. She perfected that voice. I saw many interviews where she talked about it.
Well, I'm sorry, but I think Peel should have been like, no. And also the animal growls. I thought that was very dramatic. Anyway, I still think Lupita was amazing because she pulled off her two characters. And I believed that they were two completely separate entities playing those roles. You know, if that makes sense. Like, I felt like it was two actresses mm-hmm. playing those, and she did a really great job of executing that.
With Lupita, the one thing that really stood out to me most about her was, yes, you already said it, two unique performances, so that's there. That whole dance thing at the end, the dance attack, that was just so well orchestrated and powerful in a way, because I really loved her movements in that, her fluidity. She just was so fluid and graceful, and they were just like little stabs, little dance, little stab. And it was really almost romantic in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that whole moment was actually beautiful. I just found her to be completely captivating on screen. Like, everything she does, like, she was doing, I couldn't take my eyes off of her. I don't know why, I don't know what it was, but I just, like, I was just so fascinated by everything she, every movement she made, and it was just so much fun.
Did anybody else stand out?
Winston Duke was pretty great.
Were you a big Winston Duke fan? He was funny.
I might be.
He was hysterical.
Yeah, I might be, because like the whole thing, like when you first see him on screen, you're like, oh boy, here comes Dad Bod M'Baku. And no, he's not Dad Bod M'Baku. He's Jordan Peele. And he sounds like Jordan Peele, he's talking like Jordan Peele, he thinks he's awesome like Jordan Peele. Like, it's pretty fun watching him do that.
I have to
agree. If you
want to
get crazy, We can get crazy.
I did really like that part, though.
And the boat thing. It was a total dad moment. Check out this boat! Oh, it's junk.
The daughter, who is Shahadi Wright Joseph, the actress, mm-hmm. I really liked her, too. Especially when she had that...
Both sides, flip sides? Like,
yeah.
Parallel universes?
Yeah, but when there's my favorite moment of her, it just stuck in my memory, is when Lupita's grabbing her kids, the us are first coming in, the Reds are first coming into the house, mm-hmm. and she's wrapped up in Lupita's arms, and she's trying to be quiet, and she just has tears streaming down her face, and you can see the fear in her expression with the tears rolling down, and I believed that was a real moment of fright for this person, and I was like, wow, she's really good. For being a young actress, I was, all right, I'm sold.
Yeah, I would agree. One thing that kind of surprised me is Elizabeth Moss.
We did not like her.
We know is a great actress. I wasn't that impressed with her character or that whole family, actually. They were all just caricatures.
Yeah, they're assholes. We weren't supposed to like them.
Yeah, I got that. But they were like caricature. They didn't. Everybody else in the movie, like the family, Lupita and her family, feel like a real family. They felt like real characters. They each one of them felt like a character. These guys feel like they're in a parody.
Yeah.
That was my only problem with them. And I feel like Elizabeth Moss is a really great actress. If you watch Handmaid's Tale, you know that. You watch Mad Men, you know that. And so it's kind of wasted material in a way, a wasted actress. I think she could have brought a little bit more to the role.
I think they tried to make her too white girl and didn't give her enough drama. She's very good at drama. This light, upbeat type of person she's supposed to be. I was like, I'm not buying this for a single second.
You need her to be just desperate.
As an actress,
and angry,
there are some crushed. Actors who have a very defined kind of role. And I truly believe Elizabeth Moss is really meant for drama, maybe even horror in some respects. Because when she's in her red element, I bought her. But when she was trying.
Yeah, that was way better.
It was a little creepy. I mean, when she does a little smile and she's mm-hmm. creepy. But when she's being this ultra valley girl, white woman.
Bitchy.
That you don't like. It was so unbelievable. And it was trying to be too light with her character. And I don't think that suits her.
Same with Dad. The Josh Tyler or whatever. Tim Heidecker. Mm. When he's chasing Winston Duke around. I'm just, really? Winston Duke? He's the big dude. And even though he's not the toughest guy. He could pummel that guy into the ground. So that was just one where I'm like, oh, this is the biggest suspension of disbelief I have in the entire movie. I mean, the whole tethered thing should be where I have it. But no, I got it right here. Because Winston Duke, I think, just lays you out. All right, so let's talk about that ending. What is your interpretation of events? We're going to see if we're all on the same page. Because this is what everybody's talking about, is how the movie ended. Now, I'm not talking about the exposition where they explain how the movie ended. How do you interpret this movie as, like, what happened here, John?
To me, what I saw was the meek inheriting the earth, and that's about it. I didn't really read too much into it.
Okay, well, I kind of meant a little bit more detailed. Adelaide switched places with Red, becomes a person, learns to speak again, because that was, you know, why she couldn't speak, mm-hmm. right? When she came back. Meanwhile, Red is this human with a damaged voice box, which is why she has the weird voice that Amanda mm-hmm. hates. Begins plotting this uprising where the Tethered kill their lookalikes to both send a message to mankind that they won't live in the tunnels eating rabbits anymore, and also just so Red can get her life back. That's the plot as I understand it. Do you get anything more than that, Amanda? Because John, he got haves and have-nots, which I agree is very much about, you know, the people in the tunnels are very much the poor, and the people above are the rich.
Yeah, it's too, there is a lot of mimic in terms of our society and
class
the
war.
Division. Yeah the war. Divisions. And I really feel like there wasn't too much. I wish there would have been more subtlety with the message they were trying to get across. And I came out of it feeling like I was on the side of the Reds. I understood their position. And then I remember when I was watching the beginning with the little rabbits, which mm-hmm. was a very long title sequence. Holy crap.
Aaron already said that.
I know, but I'm just picturing it in my head and I'm like, man, that really lasted a long time.
Especially when you say it twice.
Yeah. But I noticed that there were, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but it felt like there was also something about race in this too, which obviously was part of Get Out. There's a whole bunch of white bunnies and there's a couple black bunnies, but then there are some that have a little spots of black in them. And I didn't know if this was like a way for him, because he had bunnies in Get Out too, not like a sequel, but in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if that was his way of almost tying.
I was like, what, does he go back to this place? Why would you ever go back?
I didn't know if that was a tie to Get Out, was to talk about, like, this is also a way to talk about racial division in our society as well, where...
He said it's not about race. I mean, so I can, according to Jordan Peele, it's not about race. It's about class war.
Right. Like, if you look at the two different families, you have the... What were their names again? The Tylers, who were all jerks. They were jerks to everybody. And they just, without hesitation, dead. But then you have the Wilsons, who, like, they were nicer, they were calmer, they were better people. They weren't as well off as the Tylers. And yet they were able to fight through everything that was thrown at them. So that kind of shows you, like, where that class war really is.
I mean, what I could get why... You could take it that way. That's the cool thing about a movie like this. You can take it different ways. You really can. There are different meanings. I mean, you do have a white family who they're all about the money and they get obliterated. And you have the black family who aren't. They want that stuff, but they're not willing to sacrifice family for it. And they live. So there's different ways to look at that, I suppose. The explanation we got, men did this a long time ago. Men created this project because they wanted to control people. So essentially they create the Tethered. They're linked to their... above
the
ground,
doppelganger.
The above ground, the real person, and they mimic their every movement, and eventually men can use them to manipulate them, but it didn't seem to work for whatever reason, so they abandoned the project. We don't really know. Does that mean, is it across the country? Is it just in this area? It really seemed like this is worldwide at the end, because that's a long line of Hands Across America people. It looks like it might go across America.
One of the lines that they said in the beginning of the movie is, like, there's millions of miles of tunnels underneath the United States, and nobody knows what the reason why for that is.
So the assumption is that, yes, this is world or countrywide.
Right.
So they're uprising all over the place. Apparently, she walked or communicated, made sure everybody communicated across the country so that people on the other side of the country were well aware that this was the uprising, and we're going to wait until Adelaide gets to Santa Cruz.
Well, when you put it like that.
I mean, there's always suspension of disbelief in every horror movie. That was just one. So I have some questions, okay?
Okay.
Who's dropping these rabbits if they abandon the project? Because they still had rabbits.
Well, bunnies...
Rabbits bone really fast.
They do.
But they were in cages. So who's putting them in these cages and releasing them?
Well, the people could be putting them in there. Because otherwise you have
suspension
bunnies.
Suspension of disbelief.
Okay. You
have bunnies running around everywhere. I don't know.
This is my biggest question, though.
Okay.
It's a sincere question based on the mythology that was established by Jordan Peele in the movie. if the real Red could escape, why couldn't the rest? Were they just afraid to? Like, how did that one come to be where she escaped? And why couldn't the rest of them follow suit? Why couldn't they just walk out the door like she did?
Because her tethered person wandered off to a place where she didn't belong. So she wandered off to a place she didn't belong.
So why didn't the real Adelaide, once she, you know, woke up or whatever, why didn't she go out the same door that this girl had to go out to see her?
It's in the script.
Well, she was also like handcuffed. So wasn't she handcuffed to the, or she was like locked up, wasn't she? Tied to something?
She was either tied down or locked up.
Yeah, she was confined in some respect. And maybe when you're down there for so long and your tethered person goes up above, that there's it diminishes your real human, I don't know how to explain it.
But there's nothing in the story that explains that you guys can figure out.
No, there's nothing in the story that they didn't tell why that was like that.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Besides, it's in the script. It's on page 2, paragraph 3.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that nobody happened to walk in that direction that was tethered that had a copy down there. Because there's obviously a stop of the copies. So not everybody has a replica. There's only so many that are done because they abandoned the project.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And I don't think that they were communicating across the world. I think she was communicating with the lot that are in her area that she could communicate to.
Well, I'm saying, but if they were across the world, they would have had to communicate at some point. Otherwise, how would the people in New York know?
Well, I think they just spread out. I think they started from one area and spread out. I don't know that it was...
No, they got to the border of the state and the line was still going with the fires and helicopters and people dying.
So the theory, based on what we saw... Not like the crazy Jason theory is actually there in the movie to make sense that it would be across the country.
Yeah, I was trying to find a resolution here.
I appreciate that, but I don't think there is one. So, but we all do understand how it ended, right? Because there seems to be a lot of people walking out not understanding they need to see it a second time. I really felt like they explained the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. Too much.
Yeah, the scene where she's in the room, when she first gets in and she sets him down and tells him the entire story. Okay, that was enough of an exposition dump. Then you do the thing at the end where she does it for 10 to 15 minutes and does it again. It needs to be layered. Great ideas, man, but just siphon it out a little bit. Don't drop it right. Don't drop it like it's hot.
They didn't need to have a conversation. They did not need to have a conversation.
That wasn't a time to have a conversation.
Okay, you don't have to yell at us. We both agree with you.
I know, but it makes me so mad because that was really the biggest downfall. Now, as much as I liked like the little dance routine and stuff, there was just too much. And I think...
Wait, so do you like Jordan Peele's movies anymore?
What do you mean anymore?
He's the greatest director of all time.
Oh my God, that's not what I said.
I believe that's what you said a couple of weeks ago or months ago.
A couple of weeks ago, first of all, no. And second of all, no. Now, while I wasn't saying that he's the greatest filmmaker of all time or even our time, he is somebody that I want to follow because he is creative. And he has a platform that he's reaching a lot of people to bring into the horror genre. And I like that he's focusing on the horror genre.
All right, Amanda, we have a special guest here for you tonight. It's you from the past. Aaron, kick it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
He's not going to do that. Yeah, that's editing work.
You're asking for a lot of work on my part, man. I don't appreciate that. So let's get away from that. Favorite moments. What do you love about us? We've already talked about the things that bothered us and whatnot, but we did enjoy the movie. So what were your favorite moments from us?
I had quite a few of them. Even though the bunny sequence was very long, I did like the title of the sequence with the little bunnies. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. I enjoyed Baby Adelaide with the TV. So that opening really worked.
Especially, I mean, they're nodding to everything that happens in that one opening scene. That's, even though it was a little long, that was a really cool way to emphasize that you've got Chud, you've got Goonies, you know, all that stuff. There's Goonie lines throughout the movie, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's cool stuff happening in there. I super love, we already said the line, but when he goes outside and he's like, you want to get crazy? We can get crazy. Because, I don't know, I think that's how a normal person would respond and react to...
No! A normal person that sees four people standing out there that refuse to leave your driveway calls the cops immediately.
Well, they did. Oh, here's one thing we didn't talk about.
The cops had never come?
15 minutes? That was not 15 minutes, but I mean, of course, they probably see. Here's
they're probably
the
dead.
They could be dead.
I mean, a lot of people are mad that the cops never actually show up. I would argue that a lot of people died, and it's like a ghost town when they go there later. So to me, it makes sense that cops never showed up.
But there's not a replica for everybody.
We don't.
Yes, there is. Actually,
there is.
There's not, because they abandoned the project.
But we have Jason. He's a kid. So it looks like every time somebody that has a replica has a baby comes out of that replica. That's the way I understood it. They mimicked everybody. This is one of those things where you have to just go with the logic of the story.
Fine. The cops didn't show up. Yeah. Whatever. Grr.
My favorite part happens to be when Zora is sitting in the driver's seat of the car and she's all like, I'm driving. And they start arguing over who has the most kills.
That was so funny. I forgot about that.
I really enjoyed that. And also when the Tylers got axed, I don't know why I enjoyed watching them die, but it was a lot of fun.
I know exactly why, because we couldn't, they were just, to me, they were heightened caricatures. I wanted them dead. I just couldn't stand them. The girls, I wish they would have died on the beach
before
the movie got any further. The Lost Boys, for me, the Lost Boys was a big deal. They had a Lost Boys reference in there if you caught it when they were filming on the pier, because the movie came out after that. It was pretty cool. Chud, I love Chud. John, you're probably with me because it's from our generation. That seeing Chud just made me happy as a human being. Just there's a lot of things in the movie that are basically a nostalgia bomb for people my age, and I really, really dug that. And everything Lupita does in the movie, including the voice, worked for me. I was really amazed by her performance because it's very, very hard to do a role where you're basically playing twins and it works.
Can we explain the Chud? I got all the other references, but
cannibalistic,
I don't know what Chud is.
Humanoid underground dwellers. It's a movie from the 80s.
Okay. I got all the other references.
You sounded like Elizabeth Moss right there.
That's terrible.
So when you think you're sounding like, that's funny. No, that's Elizabeth Moss. That's what I'm going to call you from now on. I'm going to be like, oh, Mossing it up. That we're doing.
That's so rude.
Yep. That's what I'm going to do. Snap. If you want to get crazy, we'll get crazy.
There we can get crazy.
Moss it up. I can add a wool if I want. We did talk about a lot of issues we had and whatnot, but I do want to end on a high note because we did enjoy the movie. Tell people why they should see Get Out and what your score is, John. If $10 is the full price of admission.
You mean Get Out?
Okay, us. You know what? Everybody see Get Out because that's a great movie. Let's talk about us. The movie Us.
Why you should see Get Us. I when I went to the theater.
See, that's so easy, is it?
No, it's not. So why you should go see it? Well, you know what? The experience that we had going to the theater was actually a fun and interesting experience. I had people around me who were jumping around. There were people who really enjoyed it. There were people who got scared, got tense, and that's one of the reasons why you go to a horror movie like this. So you get to go to a horror movie that does elicit that crowd reaction that makes it so much fun. You also get a great and interesting story that is, the word just escaped my head, but unique in its own way. Sure, there's some scary movie tropes that pop up here and there, but it's also wonderfully acted by a cast that's very strong. So my final score was 550.
Okay.
Well, if you're listening to this, it's all spoilery, so you've seen it anyway, so I guess I don't really need to sell you. But if you want to steal my words to say to a friend to get them to go see it a second time with you, I would say that this is a film that is trying to be unique and creative and distinct and does work in its way. Even though there are some problems with the execution, it's still a movie that you're going to enjoy, that's going to build tension within you, that's going to make you want to talk to your friends about it, talk any theories you might have, and enjoy some incredible casting performances. Some cool kills, too. Final score, $6.
It's a really sharp idea. Great ideas. Flawed execution. Definitely everybody should watch it. I don't feel like it's going to have rewatchability like Get Out does. I can watch Get Out right now again, and I would be excited to watch it. I don't have a need to ever watch Us again. That's the difference. I give it $6, but everybody should check it out just so that they can talk about it. We need more unique and interesting ideas out there in horror, and actually in every genre. There's nothing wrong with this kind of thing in every genre. Create original, unique ideas. There are a lot of independent filmmakers that are making these kinds of movies right now, and nobody's talking about them. So maybe this being a success, and it's a huge success, will allow those filmmakers and those ideas to be accepted a little bit more widely, and we won't get just comic book movies and just blockbuster movies. We'll actually get these kinds of innovative ideas again, which we used to get all the time. We're not getting as much. That's what I hope comes from this. And my score is $6.
Yeah. And this movie broke $70 million over the weekend, which is the strongest for a unique or original, I guess is the word they use, original story since Avatar.
Original horror story.
Well, they specified since Avatar, unless Avatar is a horror.
I mean, I was pretty terrified of the acting.
Bam! All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed this discussion of us. Definitely let us know what you thought about us. Tell us in the Facebook group or tell us on Twitter, whatever you want to do. And remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. Yeah, just in case there's, outtakes and stuff. I need it.
I am recording on my side all the long day.
Oh, I thought it was all the long days.
So you thought it was none of the words that you said out loud? That was like, no. I gave you up on the song.
I quit song. Already.
Excelente. Excelente.
Stop.
We're waiting for Amanda.
I'm getting there.
John's drinking a thermos.
John drinks loudly.
I think John is, that's for emphasis.
I think it is.
That's too. Code for, we're waiting in the green room. We're waiting in the green room.
So can I tell you something? I got a quick little story for you.
Oh,
so
boy.
Courtney and I went and saw Us at my favorite theater, and we got there a little early, and so she ordered me a beer, a 16-ounce beer, mm-hmm. and I drank it down really fast.
Okay.
And so then I drank the other one,
mm-hmm.
and halfway through the other one, I went, oh, shit, I lost 22 pounds.
Oh, so you didn't realize it's going to hit you as much as it did, right?
Right. I had no idea. I was so relaxed during Us.
What horror? This seems like a typical Friday night. All right, you ready? Everybody bring your energy level up.
Ready, Freddy.
Okay. Wow. That's extreme. You good?
Why does he get to say it and I don't get to say it?
Because he's making fun of you. So that makes
maybe he just really wanted to say it.
No, I promise you it's because he was making
John,
you can speak for yourself. Were you making fun of her?
I can neither confirm nor deny the rumors. There was no collusion.